Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Outreach Radio, brought to you by the Elite Speakers Bureau. Join ESB owners and your hosts, Denise Brown and Danielle Pierre, as they discuss and interview their expert speakers regarding topics such as violence prevention, school safety, suicide prevention, addiction and recovery, mental health and wellness, leadership, and more. Denise and Danielle also interview event hosts about their upcoming events, so tune in weekly to ask questions, find solutions, or get event information. All showtimes to be announced. And now, here's your hosts, Denise and Danielle.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Outreach Radio. This is Danielle Pierre. And Denise couldn't join us today. We seem to be playing, my co-host, we seem to be playing musical hosts over the past few weeks. So there, we have various different things that have come up. So this week, it's going to be me flying solo. And we do have an amazing guest, Susan Still. And Susan has a really great story of courage and survival. And I can't wait for her to share it with you. But just to give you a brief, she is a survivor of 24 years of abuse from her former husband. And this case was seen on 2020. And her case is unique in that her ex-husband was sentenced because of that abuse to 36 years. And that was a landmark for New York State. So that's the longest sentence, as far as I know, to date that has been handed down for domestic violence in that state. And we're going to get Susan on here so she can tell her story and see how she survived, what gave her the courage to eventually leave, and then where she is now. So I will bring Susan on now, and we'll get going. Susan.
Hi, Danielle.
Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure, my pleasure. Now, I just gave a really brief intro about your story because I wanted to really save that for you because there's a lot to it. So can you explain to our audience, or share with our audience, I should say, your story, where this all started, and we'll take it from there.
Sure. Well, I was with my husband for 24 years. We have 3 children together. For the first 22 years of our relationship, he emotionally, verbally, financially abused me. And during the last 2 years, he physically abused me as well. It got to the point where the abuse was so bad that I knew I was going to die within days. And then he threatened one of my children. He had not been physically abusive to my children prior to that. And prior to me stepping out of that relationship, I did not, you know, I thought my children were okay because he wasn't physically hurting them. When he threatened one of them with physical abuse, that was the line in the sand for me. And I was not going to allow him to cross that. So I prayed that evening that God would help me get out to work the next day. That's a tall order. As anyone who has experienced domestic violence knows, our abusers very much determine whether we go to work or, you know, very much determine what we do throughout our day. And I knew that if he, you know, if he saw how battered I was, because his violence had escalated to the point where he didn't care where he hit me or, you know, whether I could cover it up or hide it. But I knew that if he saw me, he would not let me go. So I prayed. And, you know, he used to follow me around in the mornings while I was getting ready to go, getting ready, my kids ready to go to school, just looking for me to do something that he perceived to be wrong so that he could keep me home from work. He always did it. And so I prayed and asked God to please get us out.
Okay, so did this also affect your ability to work or to keep employment because he would keep you home if you felt like it, basically?
This is how it did. in the 24 years we were together, I was the breadwinner for the first 12. And then the next 12, he was. And I had just returned to work probably 9 months before I left. I returned to work part-time. So we're talking about in that last 9 months, it affected me and how I functioned. I felt like work was the only place that I could do something right. But he would make me call in at times. He made me keep my kids home from school so much that they were, two of them almost failed kindergarten because they missed so much school.
Wow.
So it did affect, it affected us in that way. I did not have my employer come to me and say, we're going to have to let you go if you can't, you know, if you can't keep your hours or that kind of thing. However, my boss, when things got really bad, the last month or so, my boss knew what was going on. So maybe I would have been approached about it. I don't know. But at that point, she knew. So
right.
I know
she had a little more compassion.
Yes. And also the man that owned the business that I worked for, because she also told him. I didn't know that she did that, but she did. So ultimately, I was able to get out that morning. He didn't come anywhere near me. So I, you know I was blessed. I know God got us out of that, and I was able to get to my job the next morning and call the police. But the night before, when he threatened my child, he had also had one of my children videotape one of the interrogations of me that went on. We usually had what he called family meetings, where he would call my kids in and sit down, and we'd go on for hours about everything that mommy did wrong, all the things that were wrong with me, how I didn't love them. He would go on and on. And he had one of my children videotape it. And that videotape and the physical assault that followed it, followed the interrogation, all that was on videotape. It helped.
Yeah.
It was one of the pieces of evidence that helped convict him, yes.
Yeah, and I was actually going to bring that up, so I'm glad you did, about the videotape, because I did see the show. I did see the videotape. It's highly disturbing. It's infuriating. In moments. So for any of our listeners who do seek out the tape, it was on 2020, or the video. Her son was forced to record it. How old was he at the time? 13? 12?
He was 13 at
Your
the
son?
Time, yes.
13, right.
13.
So dad's, you know, not only abusive, but he's now brainwashing the kids and making them believe that it's your fault. Absolutely.
Oh, yes.
And so you know, and seeing that just was such an eye-opener for anybody that does not understand domestic violence or maybe has never been exposed to it and doesn't have a full understanding of the impact that it has on a person. That video is available, and I'll give you some information a little bit later. So, Susan, you when it came to your children, that is where you began to become physically violent or at least threatening your kids. That is what pushed you to the point
That was the huge indicator. And the fact that I knew I wasn't going to live, I was also having physical problems because of my, you know, because of him assaulting me. And, you know, I thought I was going to drop dead. And so, I knew, you know, if he kept beating me, I was just going to not make it. I knew I wouldn't live past a few more days. And then it's like, what happens to my children when I'm gone? So my big deal was my children, yes.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you a question that has been floating around forever, and there seems to be a breakdown of understanding. And so the goal here today really is to help the listeners understand, for those who do not, why abused, I was going to say women, but it's not only women. There are cases of domestic violence for males as well, but primarily women, which is why we always, I think, default to say that. But why victims of domestic violence don't leave right away. First indication, why we don't just say, oh, no way, and walk out the door. Can you give a, can you explain to our audience how that really, what really goes on there?
I can, absolutely. The first thing I'd like to say actually about that question is that the more appropriate question should be, why does the other person abuse? Because
absolutely,
a victim should not have to uproot themselves, their children, from their homes, their jobs, their communities, because another person has a problem. So that putting it in that context, is there's a better question to ask. But I do understand where the nature of the question comes from. And there's not a simple answer to that. It's important to know that these relationships don't start out like that. It's important to know that when we meet our significant others, they don't come to us and then take us home and beat us that first night, because nobody would stay in that relationship. And victims of abuse are not stupid people. We're not stupid. This happens over time. They start out and come to us as Prince Charming, and they say all the right things, and they find out what our voids are, and they fill those voids, and, you know, they're these wonderful people. And then over time, control begins to set in, the verbal attacks begin to start, and sometimes, you know, the control will set in the guise of love, like they, you know, they, oh, I care about you, and I don't want you to go, you know, out after dark with, unless you're with me, because I want to make sure you're okay, you know, it's rough out on the streets or whatever. I fell into that. And I found myself a grown woman still not going out after dark from a conversation that was had when I was 18 and met him. And in accepting his control, but made in the guise of love, you know, I didn't look at it as controlling. I felt like, oh, my gosh, he cares about me so much. He doesn't want anything to happen to me, you know. So and I thanked him for that. But in accepting that in the beginning of the relationship, it set a precedent for the rest. And I found myself, as I said, grown, still not going out after dark. So they begin to gain control slowly. And then it, you know, gradually turns into verbal abuse, and then gradually turns into financial abuse. And it's important to understand that we as victims and most people really don't think of abuse as abuse until it's physical. So prior to him physically hurting me, I'm in this relationship, and I don't understand that I'm in an abusive relationship at all. And then, you know, we explain it away. Oh, that's just how he is, you know. Oh, I just want to have this nice because, you know, he works hard when he comes home. I just want everything to be perfect. When in reality, you know that if it's not perfect, then there's going to be a problem for the rest of the night, you know. But again, that's just how he is. So we sort of explain certain things away. The money.
And I think a lot of victims also try and change themselves. As if, do you understand? Thinking that, well, maybe this is something that I need to change. This is something that's wrong with me. And particularly if the abuser has, you know, now gotten to know you, knows what your weaknesses are, knows your vulnerabilities, I should say, not weaknesses, and things that you may be sensitive about, you know, because you've told stories about your past, you've told stories about your family, you've told all these things that maybe have happened to you over the years, so they know what to target when that time comes. And so
and then that's what they do.
Absolutely. So you start to think, there's something wrong with me. And I need to change myself because obviously,
They, you know, the verbal attacks start, and it's not only you. Like you said, my husband used to talk about my family. He isolated me from them. He talked about my friends. He isolated me from everybody that cared about me. And then you get to this point where you start to begin to think, you know, okay, I'm stupid. He used to call me stupid. And in the actual videotape that was made, the videotape is 54 minutes long, and 13 minutes of it is physical assault, and the other 41 is mental and verbal abuse. And he calls me, in that 41 minutes, he calls me stupid like 37 times, which averages almost a stupid a minute. And how many times does somebody have to call you something before you begin to believe it about yourself?
Right.
So I thought I was stupid, and then you get to the point where they finally, you know, even if you can give, you know, if you can, if you give something back, if they're verbally calling you names and you're verbally calling names back, you know, or if they're pushing you and you push them back trying to defend yourself, even if you can do that, at some point this relationship is, the abuse is going to do something that's going to totally overpower the victim, where the victim cannot give a reaction back that's going to equal it. And at that point, right, that abuser, you know, that victim is going to remember that moment. And 2 weeks from then, all he'll have to do is give that victim a look to remind that victim about, you know, what happened in that physical assault 2 weeks before. And won't have to lay a hand on the victim, but still has them in fear, knowing what can
right.
happen.
Instilling
so when you're at that point in
the
relationship,
yeah.
Right, and so when you're in that position and you're looking and you're saying, okay, he's telling me that I'm the one with the problem, okay? He's telling me that these things, that I'm not doing these things right. And what we remember is we remember this relationship when it was, you know, I love you and I love you too. And, you know, understand that in 24 years, every day wasn't like what was on that video. In 24 years, there's a million good times. So,
right.
you know, and that's the difference when you're talking about domestic violence. This is not stranger on stranger crime. This is a crime perpetrated against you by someone who loved you or is supposed to love you. So it makes it all gray because there's a relationship here. This is not, you know, a stranger. And this person is telling me, you know, that I'm the one with the problem. So what am I thinking as a victim? Well, if I just fix me, then everything will go back to be the way it was. Because we know that there were all these other good times in this relationship. So, you know,
and there's freckled throughout, right? There's freckled throughout. It's
yes.
not just,
oh,
okay,
yes.
so the first year was good and then you had 23 years of abuse. No. It's freckled throughout. So you've got good times and then you've got a bad and then a good bad, and that is where that, well, brainwashing, but then again, like you said, you're in a relationship, so you're trying to reach back toward the good that is there.
Yes.
In each instance, and it just gets progressively
yes.
worse, right? Am I hearing okay?
Yeah.
Yes.
And
so
and you continue
think
to think if I just fix me, it'll all be okay.
Right. It'll be when it's good. It'll be nice when, like, when
mm-hmm.
we go to dinner or when we go out to a movie or when we, you know, are affectionate with each other. And so I think that might be where some of the misunderstanding is, because this question has been continuing to come up and has been answered so many times. Why doesn't she just
yeah.
leave? And you're right. It definitely should be a different question. But just
yeah.
to even give the listeners an understanding, it's not all abuse. It's highs and lows. It's almost like a bipolar relationship, right? So, yeah.
Right.
And I think that's
and then you have
the, and you know, go ahead.
I'm sorry. You go ahead and
finish. No, that's fine. No, go ahead.
I was going to say
it's fine.
But then you also have the second part of it where you come to, okay, supposing a person does want to step out of this relationship. There are also many things that prevent them from being able to walk out that door and just not look back. You know, you when you have someone who's totally controlling the money in your home, okay, so, you know, I would go home, take my paycheck, hand it over, all the money was in a safe that I didn't have the combination to, okay, if you have that situation where you don't have money in your hand, where maybe there's no bank accounts in your name, or there's probably maybe credit cards in your name because, you know, they make us take credit cards out in our names, but they control the cards. So you either have bad credit or no credit at that point. When you're talking about stepping out and even trying to, you know, have enough money for rent. And what if you're a person that is an at-home mom or have a part-time job so you don't make enough money to support yourself or your children to even pay a month's rent? Suppose you have a child that, you know, needs medical care and, you know, your abuser is the one who has the job with the health benefits. I mean, I've known of situations where people have quit their job on purpose just so the health benefits, you know, they'll threaten, say, I'm going to quit, and then there won't be any health benefits, and I've heard of people doing it, which is horrible, you know. But that would make someone, you know, think twice about stepping out of there. So, you know, there are financial reasons,
you know,
there are business reasons.
And there's also people with pets. They love their pets. And they don't, you know,
pets,
they have nowhere to take their pets and their pets.
That
is a big thing. I mean, I have, you know, I have two pets. I would not know what to do if I had to give them up.
Mm-hmm.
So
pets are people's families.
You know,
pets are part
of
people's families. And so, you know, a lot
and
of
so
people don't know.
Yeah, and I
thank
think
goodness
that
there is a...
Sorry. We're both no, it's okay. This is your show. I think we just have a lot of passion when it comes to these things, so we're trying to throw it all out there within our 30 minutes.
Right.
But that's fine. My apologies. But the pets too, and I'm just gonna say this really quickly and then we have to move on to a couple of things for you to address with our listeners. But I believe now they're beginning to make domestic violence shelters. With where they can bring their pets. I think that's something that
that's
I've
exactly
heard recently.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
That they're trying. Was it? Okay, so we are on the same.
Yes.
Go ahead.
We
you may
are
know
on
more
the
about
same page.
Do.
Yes. many of the shelters are either they're making accommodations for pets on shelter site or they're making arrangements with the local animal shelter in their area. There are a lot of animal shelters now that will also take on the pets for free to take care of, you know, take care of them while people may have to be in shelter. So it's a
That's
big
wonderful.
Thing, and it's starting to, you know, people are realizing that, yes, it's going to be helpful. I just visited a shelter recently that took on pets, and I went in the room, and there were birds and dogs and cats. I mean, it was just, it made me feel very... very warm inside, almost brought me to tears in how far things have come.
Yes.
Because in that respect,
and
I know, you know, when they had a whole area where people could play with their pet and all of that, it was just wonderful.
And they're just making all kinds of accommodations now because, and that's why this is so important, and that's why we keep talking about this. And that's why, and you're a speaker, and you go out and you speak to different agencies and military bases and youth conferences and colleges to people, and the reason for it's not beating the same drum over and over again. Like, and, you know, I've heard so many people say this is to keep it alive and help people to understand what's really going on here. Who all is affected? Because we are all affected by this, whether people believe that or not.
Oh, yeah.
We are all affected by this in so many levels. And I wish we had more time to really touch on that. And we'll probably have to bring you back and go a little deeper into it. But this does affect everybody. And it is our issue. It's not just a women's issue. It's not just a male issue. It's an everybody issue.
It's everyone's issue.
See people,
yes, it is.
It is. And to see people, agencies and shelters and animal shelters and whatnot all come together to help, you know, end violence against women and end violence period, you know, and abuse, domestic abuse altogether is just a wonderful thing. We have come very far because that was not even in a, you know, anywhere in the thought years ago.
No.
You know, it was hard enough to even get women listened to, much less, or victims listened to, much less, give them these opportunities.
Yes.
So having said that, we're going to move into exactly that. If there is somebody listening today or several people listening today who are in an abusive relationship, what advice do you have for them?
One thing that I would say would be to not stay for the sake of your children. Even just witnessing the abuse can have a very negative and devastating effect on them, and it will continue. They feel it and the trickle of it long time afterwards. Counseling absolutely is really big in that regard. I say that anyone that's been touched by it, experienced it, counseling is huge. It's something that I will forever stay in. My children, counseling was the best thing that could have happened to them. Know that there are services available to address not only your immediate needs, but long-term needs as well. There are, services available to help you find a place, to stay immediately, but there are also services that can help you to relocate if you need to, or to give you some housing until you can get on your feet, maybe get some education and get a degree so that you can get a job that can help support you totally, you and your family or whomever it be that you need to support. So know that there are services available for immediate and long-term needs. If you're a victim, do not blame yourself. The abuser is the one with the problem. And I would say don't believe the negative things that your abuser is saying. Your abuser is not all-knowing and not all-powerful. And that was something that I believed when I was in it. I just thought he knew everything because we lose ourselves into those relationships. Our world becomes their world. It's all about them and their wants, needs, their world. But they're not all-knowing and all-powerful. And know that you can have a good life outside of this relationship. Know that you can. I am so grateful for where I am today. And you couldn't have told me 24 years prior to me leaving that that's how our family would have ended up. And I wasn't quite sure once I stepped out what exactly was going to happen to us because, I didn't have any information, as most victims don't. We don't have information to know what we're experiencing, what we're living in, how it's affecting our children or what's available. I didn't have any of that. I just got out knowing I needed to get out. But, even when I first got out, I didn't know then how good life could be. I had just lived in terror and lived in control and was secluded from the world. And just, to be able to decide when I wanted to go outside and go drive someplace when I wanted to go drive to that place, when I felt like it. Little things like that.
Freedom.
A big deal.
Not only the freedom of doing what you want, but the freedom of knowing that you're okay. The whole experience. And I don't mean to rush you because we are limited on time, but I do want you to also, for people that have loved ones or friends or coworkers who they suspect are in a domestic violence relationship or they know they are, what advice do you have for them as well?
For friends and relatives, when you know that someone close to you is in an abusive relationship, and the best thing that you can offer is support for them. Support is also something that, not having it will have people remain in that relationship. Be non-judgmental your victim is constantly being told by the abuser what they're doing wrong, why they should do this, why they should do that. And if they look to someone for help and that person that they're looking to is telling them the same thing, this is wrong, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that, think of a way that you can word it to sound like a suggestion. Think of a way you can word it to sound encouraging. Just listen, be an ear. Everybody isn't going to be ready to step out at the moment that you want them to. They may have things that they need to work out. They look at barriers. They may You know, they may have tried to get out before and then thing, you know, didn't work out right for them. So they go back and they may be working on fixing that, putting together that next piece of the puzzle in order to be able to step out again. So be supportive. Don't reject them. I know it can be frustrating and people say, well, I can't listen to it anymore. If you're not going to leave, then just don't call me. That, you know, then you're making your victim feel like they're letting not only their abuser down who they're trying to please, but they feel like they've let you down too. And then they may not reach out to you when they really, really need you. So try to be supportive. And I would also say document things. If you're concerned about something, if they're telling you things, you know, write it down. Write down everything that you see, that you maybe observed. Write down what they told you, what date they told you that this happened, that sort of thing. And keep a log for your friend because, you know, when your friend, should they decide to step out of that relationship and they may need an order of protection or, you know, they may have a court case coming up, you'll have some information there that can help them.
Susan, thank you so much for everything. This has been great. We are going to have to bring you back because there's some more questions that I do have for you, and I think our listeners would benefit from in a little bit more in depth. But for now, thank you very much. I appreciate
it. Thank you so much for having me.
You've given some great information. And Susan also is a member of the Elite Speakers Bureau. She is a speaker for our bureau, so you can find her on the elitespeakersbureau.com. Get a little more information. She also has some video there and whatnot. So, again, Susan, thank you so much, and look forward to bringing you back here soon.
Thank you, Danielle. I look forward to coming.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. Please join us again next Tuesday night for another great show. For more information about upcoming shows, visit us at www.outreachradioshow.com.